chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Stingray Robb on the show today. Stingray is a professional IndyCar driver who combines his passion for racing with a deep Christian faith, inspiring others both on and off the track. Stingray Robb, I am so excited about having you on the show today. I've really been looking forward to this. Welcome to the Something Extra podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I know our listeners are really going to love hearing your story. So we met recently. We were invited by our good friend, Steve Gattina, and the Pray.com team to come to the, I think it was the Bomarito 500 at the Technology Raceway. We met you. We met your mom, Kimmy. We met your grandparents. We met your awesome fiance, Molly, and her family. I mean, it was like a family affair. And truly, Stingray, I told you that I had never been to an IndyCar race before, but we are huge Stingray Robb fans now. We're part of the fan club.
I love it. Well, it's because you got to be part of the family. You got to get the exposure there, and now you're hooked for life, and you can't get rid of us.
No, we are hooked. I'm ready. I'm ready for the next one. And by the way, you rocked that race. You finished top 10. We were so excited. We were like rooting for you. So you did great in that race.
Thank you. You guys came to a good one.
It was. It really, really was. So I want to go back to how it all started. Because it started when you were very young. At the age of 3, Stingray, you decided you wanted to be a race car driver. And then I think you started go-kart racing when you were 5. Where in the world did that come from? How did you know at the age of 3 that that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I think it came with the name. You know, my parents were big Corvette fans, so they had to pass that passion along to me through my name. Thus, here I am, Stingray Robb, the IndyCar driver. But, you know, I think that passion started because I thought it was something natural. I mean, I spent my time from 0 to 3 at drag races, autocross events, Corvette Club meetings. I actually took my first steps at a Corvette Club meeting. And so it's just what I thought was the thing that all kids did. You know, I thought that they spent their time around cool, old, fast cars. And I knew that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And that was a passion that I had from an early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I am sure that a lot of people ask you about your name, Stingray. They probably say, now, what is your real name? That is your real name.
Because of the Stingray Corvette.
Yeah.
It worked out well. I always joke with people. I'm like, go to my Instagram, look in the bio. It says, yes, it's my real name. It's just the disclaimer that I get out in front of people every time I meet them in person. Because it's always the question that gets asked first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to chuckle because I have to chuckle. And Molly, your fiance, telling me when she met you, she goes, oh, what's wrong with this guy? That's not his name. And then she found out that it truly was your name. But she's like, oh, what's up with this guy? Stingray. What kind of name is that? But I know you started racing go-karts, right? When you were 5 years old. How do you think that early racing really shaped you as a driver and even what you do today?
I think a lot of times that's what you see professional athletes do is they start at an early age doing whatever that craft is. And it's, one of those things where they talk about talent a lot of times. But I think talent really is a beginner's passion to get better and to learn in whatever that craft is. And so I had that at an early age, that desire, that passion to learn and to go fast. And so that progression started from an early age. And I think that that helped me produce those skills quickly. And I think that the young mind learns and adapts much more quickly than what I would probably be able to do now. If I were to go back and just now start racing, no chance I would be an IndyCar driver because it would just take too long to make up that time. But it got me started on my 10,000 hours from a very early age. And no doubt it was a lot of thanks to my parents pouring into me, a lot of their hard work and efforts, and being in a place in their life that they could do that.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. And for our listeners, you may not know about the 10,000 hours, but they talk about 10,000 hours to gain mastery over something. So it doesn't matter what that is, right? But you have to put in the time, and certainly you did that. When I think you competed for 10 years, I'm just going to read a few of these titles here, Stingray, because I know you wouldn't read them yourself. But you twice ranked the number one U.S. driver in your age group. You remain the only triple crown winner, which means having won the Florida Winter Tour Championship, the Can-Am Championship, and the Challenge of the Americas Championship all in the same year. You earned a much coveted seat on the Team USA in 3 consecutive years. You've done a lot. And then after 10 years of doing go-kart, you at the age of 15, you moved to open wheel racing. So what was that transition like?
When I was making the transition from karting into cars, I wanted to make sure because, racing is not a straight path. You look at baseball, you go to high school, you go to college, you go to the MLB. There's a straight path to the top. Well, racing, there's many different top levels. I mean, you have Formula One racing, you have IndyCar racing, you have dirt track, you have NASCAR, and all of those have a different ladder to get to that top spec. And so I wanted to make sure that whatever that top spec was that I enjoyed the most was the direction I was heading. And so I drove NASCAR. I drove open wheel cars like I am today. I did dirt car racing. I did professional go-kart racing. And so I tried everything that there was to do and settled on open wheel racing because I felt it was the most dynamic of all of the ones. We were doing ovals, we're doing street courses, we're doing road courses. And then we also have to be very, very good athletes because the physical demands inside the race car are a lot higher than some of the others. There's no power steering. G forces are higher. We have more downforce, which equals more grip. And we're usually doing higher speeds. At the Indy 500, we're doing speeds around 240 miles an hour. And so that was just very intriguing for a young Stingray Rob at 15 years old. And that was the path I wanted to settle on.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, in 2020, you won the Indy Pro Championship, which was a major milestone. What did that moment mean to you when you won that Stingray?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, that was the realization of a dream for a long time and kind of a stepping stone of hope that I think that God placed in my path of like, hey, I'm going to be with you and you have to trust me through this because it's okay if I tell a story about that year because that was a special year for me.
I would love for you to tell any story. Stories are compelling. So please, yes.
Very good. 2020 was obviously a crazy year for all of us, being a COVID year. But for myself personally, that was a make it or break it season. That was going to be the end of the line for my racing career if I didn't win that championship. That was the category I was racing in was the double A ladder that leads to IndyCar racing. And so if you win that championship, you get a scholarship to move to the triple A ladder. If you win the triple A ladder, you get a scholarship to move on to IndyCar. Well, it's been a few years at this double A ladder. And not sort of proving myself to be able to move on. And so we were at a race in Ohio, which means nothing to all of you, but it was one of my favorite racetracks. And at this point, I had been in 49 races without a victory. And going to this one race, I qualified well, was really, really looking promising. I ended up driving off the track and spinning out and running into someone, all in the same race. And I finished 10th, and there was no one to blame but myself. And at that point, I went for a walk. I took a knee. I started praying. I said, God, I give up. because I've given as much as I know how to give for as long as I can remember. I mean, I'm looking back at 5-year-old Singer Rob with this burning passion to be a professional race car driver and remembering what he did and what I've done and what my parents have done, what the group around me has done to get to this point, and said, God, I'm done. Like, I give up. And in that moment, I had a memory verse from my homeschool days come back to me. And it was James 1. James 1 says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And in that moment, I realized kind of like the complete circle of like God tapping me on the shoulder and saying like, hey, Stingray, I'm still here. Like, you may not feel it at all times, but I still have a plan for your life and I'm still working good in it. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to go out on the racetrack tomorrow for race number two, and you're going to have to do something because I don't have anything else left to give. Go out. And it was like the gates of heaven opened up. The two cars in first and second were right in front of me, and they crashed into each other and they split. And it was like the, I slipped right on through and got my first victory in my 49th race start. And that was the first of seven on the season that would lead to my championship that would eventually propel me on in the IndyCar.
That is the best story ever, Stingray. And you know what? I'm just sitting here thinking, in your weakness, I am strong. That is where he, and really that is where he can get the most glory, right? Is when we are weak and we're like, we can't do it. You know, in fact, boy, is that something that we all wrestle against all the time, trying to do things in our own strength, right? And thinking that we're sufficient. We're not. We need his help with that. That is a beautiful story. I'm so glad that you shared that. Well, can you do this for our listeners? Because they may be like me, Stingray, and not understand anything about IndyCar or anything. Can you like tell just our listeners there's a path, you know, the IndyCar race path, you know, what is that and the different levels? Can you just kind of back up for 1 minute and just kind of explain that in layman's terms for our listeners that may not understand that?
Yeah, I'll try and give you some relations here too. So unlike other sports, like I mentioned before, racing is more like shattered glass as far as directions go than it is a straight path to the top. If you want to be a baseball player or a football player or a hockey player, a lot of times you're going to go to school, you're going to play the scholastic sports, whatever those may be, and then you're going to get a scholarship to go whatever college that might be, and then on to the professional leagues. For racing, there is no sort of school experience that goes along with it. You have to go out and do it on your own. So it's independent, and that's where the family comes into play. And so that's where the go-kart level kind of is. That's the elementary high school step that you might see. And then at some point you go to cars, and at the car level, again, this is IndyCar specific. I'm going to focus on that vein of shattered glass for the moment, but there's single A, double A, triple A majors, similar to what you might see in hockey, baseball, whatever else. And as you get better, you can move up. The speeds increase. The car size gets bigger, heavier, faster, all that stuff. And then the engineering level also increases. So you're developing your knowledge on the track just as much as off the track as you elevate through the different leagues there. And then if you win a championship, because racing is a unique sport, it's not just talent-based, it's backing-based. So that means funding is required to go out and drive race cars. But the scholarships allow you to enter another season. And so if you don't have the ability to have that funding, that backing, investors, partners, family, whatever else those dollars are coming from, it gives you that opportunity based off your talent level to exceed and grow past that into the next stage. So for me, I actually went from karting straight into the double A ladder, then into the triple A ladder, spent 2 years there, finished second in that championship. And that was enough to get the attention of some scouts, in parentheses, scouts, or team owners in IndyCar racing. And so it's a lot like other sports where it's a small circle. We all run in the same sort of groups. And after a while, you realize, okay, motorsports is a very small world. And it feels like a racing family at the end of the day. But that's the beautiful thing about it. It's something that we all love and enjoy, and we can find some community in that.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Well, tell me this. Let's talk a little bit about the preparation for a race, because I know there's so much mental preparation, physical preparation. I asked your mom, what does Stingray do when he's not racing? And she goes, he's working out. And I think you have a a car simulator in your house, you know, that you're like still racing, even if you're not on a physical track. Talk to us a little bit about that, like the preparation that goes into a race.
Yeah. So we'll start with the physical side. You know, I always like to tell people this, you know, we're physical, mental, and spiritual beings. And so my job as a race car driver is to be prepared in all three of those areas to step into a race car and perform at a high level. So on the physical side, the physical demands of a race car are quite high compared to what people might think. Our races are anywhere from about an hour and a half to 2.5 hours long. Cockpit temperatures can be anywhere as high as 100 to 130 degrees Fahrenheit. And then there's no power steering. So if you've ever had your power steering unit go on your old truck or something, it makes it very hard to steer. And on new tires that are super grippy and not worn out yet, that grip level increases, and that puts more force, more torque into the steering wheel. And so my job is to train at a gym that's specifically designed for drivers, so that when I get in the car, my head's not falling off from the G-forces of my neck not being able to hold it up. And so there's things like that that you don't even think about, where your core strength just to hit the brake pedal. I mean, we're hitting brake pressures as high as 2,400 PSI, which is a relative number, which doesn't mean a lot to you, but it would be like doing a 180-pound leg press, I'd say. That's a relevant number that someone might recognize at the gym. And you're doing that over and over and over and over again, several times a lap. So to get into a physical shape where your cardio is good enough, your neck strength's good enough, you're in a place where the physical fatigue is not hindering your mental ability, that's where the success happens. I always relate it to professional runners, marathon runners. They get what they call a runner's high. Well, if you get a runner's high and you check out mentally in a race car, you're probably going to end up in a barrier somewhere. And so our job is to be physically trained so that we don't check out. We're fully engaged, and our physical demands, our physical training is actually higher than our physical demands, so that we have that mental bandwidth in order to succeed. And then on the spiritual side, that goes along with where I find my identity. You know, I think that racing has the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And if I don't have a foundation to stand on other than the results, because it is a results-driven industry, and if you find your identity in that, you're going to fail and you're going to feel like a failure on your bad days. But on your good days, even though it may not be true, you might feel like a great person or good person. So my identity is tied to who Christ is and what he did on the cross. And, you know, I have merchandise, and my suit and my helmet all run the verse John 3:30 on them, which says he must increase, but I must decrease. That's a call to mission, but it's also a call to purpose. You know, if you look at a track runner and they're running a race, but they don't know which direction to run, they're never going to finish it. They're never going to succeed. And so that's my finish line. That's my call to race, if you will. So it's a passion that I have, but it's also a purpose in that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You've set me up. Because that was a natural segue, because I want to talk about your faith. It's so incredible. I mean, I got to talk to your grandparents. I got to talk to Molly. I got to talk to your mom, Kimmy, who is actually your momager. Kimmy was telling me, she goes, Lisa, even when he was racing go-karts, he would bring young boys over for Bible studies. And she said, you know, I mean, you don't get to pick your number. Your number's 41 now, right? Mm-hmm. But back then when you could pick the number, she said, anytime you could pick a number, you would either pick 316, which is John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life, John 3:16, or number two, which she said meant, you know, to you, God is number one on the racetrack and you're number two. Yeah. Yeah. So I know, like, I love that your faith is so important to you. So what, you know, having John 3:16, I've got the pray.com shirt on, and on the back, our listeners can't see this, but it says John 3:16. What does having that on your car, because you even have that on your car, Stingray, what does that mean to you to have that verse on your car?
Well, first off, I was inspired by someone that was probably an inspiration to many young athletes, but that was Tim Tebow. And I remember sitting at our home watching the national championship game and seeing his John 3:16 eye black. And when I saw that, I was like, I have to do my own version of that. And so that's where it got started, is I ran pink duct tape on the front fairing of my go-kart, and I chose pink because it stood out. And I did that in a sort of a cross shape with, you know, horizontal line, vertical line, and I'd write a verse on that every week. And so that was how I raced. I try to use my platform, and so that's continued today. I think that the beautiful thing about faith is that it's not just an insurance policy for when you die at the end of your life. I think that it changes how we live day to day, and it creates purpose in our passions. I think that God gives us these, the parable of the talents, right? Well, the actual talents that He gives us, we're supposed to steward. And so I'm trying to steward my talent, my opportunity, my abilities as best I can, and give Him glory in the meantime. Because if I don't do that, if anything I ever did was just win races, and that's all I ever did, I would still be a failure. And so I want to make sure that I'm trying to succeed for Christ, just as much as I'm trying to reach excellence on the racetrack.
So good. Well, tell me about Faith Nights at IndyCar, because that's something that you started, and why did you start them? What is it? Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, so you see in most sports, there's usually a faith night or a family faith night or some sort of belief system that people can kind of come to and celebrate their passion for the sport along with their faith, and kind of see the tie between the two. And IndyCar racing doesn't really have that currently. And so there is a great ministry called IndyCar Ministry, but it's mostly crew based or team based. And so I wanted to create an idea that was outreaching to the public, the fans, and those are the people that we really want to serve. Not saying that we don't want to serve the teams and the crew members, because those are the ones I'm rubbing elbows with, but hopefully I'm in tight enough community that's happening naturally. So we started what we've called Faith in the Fast Lane, which is an opportunity for people to kind of come hear some praise and worship music and celebrate that, and also kind of hear my passion for racing and how my faith has been tied to it for so long, and how they've kind of grown together. My faith journey wasn't just my family was believers and that was it, and I didn't try and test the truth at any point. My truth was tested every time that I stood foot on that racetrack, because it was challenging and my identity was challenged and still is challenged. I mean, I still have to submit to that every day, and I still have to go search the truth every day. And that's the beautiful thing about faith, is that it's a relationship that's grown or developed over time, rather than just a one-time choice that you make. It's that sanctification process that happens over and over and over and over again.
Every day, and you're sanctified through the good times and the bad times. And sometimes the good times, and when you're on the summit, it's even harder, right? Because pride can, I mean, goodness gracious, we don't want to get into that, but pride can creep in. You start thinking that it's all about you, and it's not. But listen, we've got so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Stingray Rob on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Stingray Rob. We've been having an amazing time talking about all kinds of things, but Stingray, I want to talk about this for a minute. I want to talk about what happened on July 14th of this year, and I have watched that video so many times, and that was scary. Tell our listeners about what happened there.
Yeah, so earlier this year, I had an acrobatic event in a race car, which I don't recommend to anyone. But towards the end of race number two at Iowa Speedway, I was following another driver who had just ran out of fuel a couple seconds before I arrived. And the closing rates at that point were pretty extreme. He was doing about 120 miles an hour. I was doing about 170 miles an hour. And there was miscommunication of sorts. And the incident then happened where I hit the back left tire of his car, launched into the air at a crazy speed, obviously, and was then elevated to the same level as the top of the catch fence, went flying through the air, double barrel roll, and then skidded to a stop after a few hundred feet on the roll bar, which, very glad to say that everything worked as it was supposed to, and I was able to walk away from that incident. The worst experience that I had from it is I burnt my finger. getting out of the car because I guess when you scrape titanium across the ground for several hundred feet, it heats up. And so, that definitely was one of the big issues there, but feel very, very lucky.
Oh my goodness. It was a miracle. Praise God. Really? No one was seriously injured in that. It was scary. I watched it several times, Stingray. But we already talked about your name. I have to give a quick shout out to our pray.com friends. Steve Gattina is a dear, dear friend. You know, what has it been like having them as a sponsor? And I know that things may be changing right now, but, we just love those guys.
Yeah, this year was really, really cool to have Pray.com on board because a lot of times a driver doesn't get to choose who their partner is necessarily. I mean, their support group is not necessarily their choice. It might be a team choice. And so for me, it was really cool to kind of go the same direction in our missions. And, you know, Pray.com created an opportunity for me to share God's word without explicitly sharing God's word. It was a tool that I was able to use to leverage the truth at the racetrack, you know. And I think one of the coolest things I got to see from this year is that there was people that stepped out to mention to me, hey, I started using the Pray.com app, even though they weren't believers. And so their relationship with the Lord had grown because of something that I wasn't explicitly telling them to do, but because of the experience that they felt through the racing community, the passion that they had there, and then the brand loyalty that they created to Pray.com because of that. And so that's a beautiful thing. I think that God has created in us humans is we have these passions, these interests, these sports that we go and chase and want to be in. And he draws people in with that, and then he secures their hearts through truth. And so having Pray.com has allowed us to do that this year, which was very, very fun.
That's so cool. Well, Stingray, you had a dream since you were 3 years old. What would you say to our listeners that have a big dream? What would you say to them? And they may not have seen their dream realized yet.
Yeah, I would say keep chasing it. But before you take a next step, submit it all to the Lord. I think a lot of times it's easy to put your hope in the plan that you have set for your dream rather than the hope in the person that holds the plan that is set for your dream. And that's a very tight line to walk. And I think that God, he wants us to be in relationship with him through it all. And it's never going to go the way that you plan. So don't try and make too detailed of plans, but be in relationship with the Lord and let him walk you through each step.
That's great advice. Well, I have a little lightning round here for you. No pun intended. Okay. Lightning round.
I like it.
You saw that, right? I was going to ask you about how fast the cars go, but I mean, they go up to what? 230, 240 miles an hour. It's crazy.
240.
And then how many laps do you typically do in a race? So like when you're talking about the Bomberino 500, what does that mean? Translate that for us.
So usually that's a number of miles that we're doing, but the track length is changing constantly. And so the Indianapolis 500, for example, is a 500-mile race, but it's a 2.5-mile circuit, so it's 200 laps. And a lot of times that's varying because we're doing road courses and street courses that instead of being 25 seconds long, they're almost 2 minutes long. So it's usually about the time base rather than his lap numbers. But like I said, it's about 1.5 to 2.5 hours is the usual margin that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long time to be racing at the speed that you're racing at. Well, is there a moment in your racing career so far, like one moment, I'm sure there's many, but is there one Stingray that you'll never forget or will you remember them all?
I mean, there's probably quite a few that I've forgotten. I think this year specifically, the flying through the air is one that I'll always remember. That was not an experience that I would recommend to anyone, but, you know, I was able to walk away. So that was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is the Indy 500 is our Super Bowl. And I got to lead 23 laps of that. And so that was one of the highlights of my career so far. And being out front felt so good. And when you're looking behind you and there's 32 other guys that are trying to chase you down and you're leading the way there, it feels pretty amazing.
I imagine that is true. Well, I've talked about your family. I mean, what has that support meant to you? what's that support mentee is doing, right? I had a guy on that has done the Explorers Grand Slam where he's like climbed every summit. I had him on earlier and he's like, I've never reached a peak by myself. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have had an incredible support. I talked to your sweet grandparents. And I think your grandmother told me she never has missed a race, or maybe if she has, it's only been a few, and she's there at everyone. What has that meant to you to have that kind of support?
It's been amazing. You know, I think it's only because of the village around me that I've made it this far. I don't think that I know that. And, you know, it's funny. Actually, I went back and listened to one of your other podcasts with Sean Copeland, and he spoke about that, how every great leader is just a kind of a coach that secures the right people in the right places at the right time and leads the way there. So I feel like I've been blessed with an opportunity to be kind of the center of that village, heading in the right direction at the right time with the right leaders. So each one has played a big role in my life. My dad was my mechanic all the way through the karting ranks, and his mechanical knowledge from his passion of cars was allowed me to be successful in the go-kart ranks. And that was enough to get the interest of partners to go into car racing. And even though that didn't continue, his mechanic work didn't continue in cars, his support never changed. And then my mom, she's been different roles in my career as well. You know, she's my, what I tout is my momager now, my mom and my manager.
Right.
And she's been fighting as hard for my career as I have for as long as I can remember. So she's a big part of my success, and definitely someone that I've needed to be able to be here. And my grandparents especially have been my biggest supporters from day one. They were the ones that were driving the go-kart to and from different races. They're the ones that have been, you know, making the meals on the road. They're the ones that are handling logistics, traveling, and all that stuff. So they're definitely some of the best people I could have around.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a village. Definitely a village. Well, let me ask you this. When you're not on the track, what's your favorite way to relax?
That's a great question. I'm a bit of an outdoorsman growing up in Idaho. So hunting, fishing, hiking, anything in nature, I love to get out and do. I'm actually going to be spending some time this October back in Idaho with my fiance. I'm going to let her go do her bridal shower, and I'm going to step out and go hunting with the guys. So that's my plan, to have some relaxation time. But usually in between races, what I spend time doing is simulator work, which is kind of fun for me. I like reading books. There's been some good books I've read lately. Wild at Heart by John Eldridge is one that I'd recommend to anyone. I think that that has changed my perspective. So good. So, so good. And then
especially for young men, don't you think? Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Right, for young men, Wild at Heart, such a great book for young men.
Yeah. I had to go back several times and reread pages, because I got to see like the 5-10 page progression of like, oh, connecting the dots back. And yes, okay, that's great. So yeah, recommend that. Honestly, men and women, I think it's a great book. So yeah, mm-hmm. Those are some of the things I like to do and relax and spend time to kind of reset before I get back in the race weekend.
Yeah, yes. Very good. Well, you got something really, a huge event happening in November. And I have to ask you, what is it? And then my second question is, are we all invited? What's happening in November, Stingray?
Yeah, so I found the love of my life in Indianapolis, and I finally put a ring on it this January, and we're going to seal the deal in November, getting married on November 10th, and it's going to be quite the party. We got quite a few people coming, so I'm very excited about it.
Oh, so wonderful. She's a wonderful girl. Well, let me ask you this. What is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
Submittance to the right things. You know, I think that a lot of times bad leaders look for a savior, and that might be someone to hire, that might be someone to bail them out, that might be themselves. And I think that great leaders are submitted to the savior, or submitted to the right things, in the sense that we're all submitting to something every day. In every choice that we make, we're submitting to whatever that truth is in that choice. And the best leaders are the ones that are submitted to the right things. And so they're not the ones that are the stand on top of the podium leading the way. They're the ones that are on the ground serving, submitted to someone already, being led by someone or something already. And so the best leaders are the ones that are led in the best way, if that makes sense.
I love it. Well, this has been so much fun. I know you've got a million things to do, so I'm going to let you get about your day, but I cannot thank you enough for being on the show. You are just, you're such an inspiring young man, and I'm so grateful that we had the opportunity, our family had an opportunity to meet you and your family.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.